This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, in this episode, I'm going to be discussing hyperhidrosis and its management. So let's just start off with our sweat glands. We've got 3 to 4 million eccrine sweat glands, called eccrine as the sweat is secreted out of the cells, so ec meaning out of, as in ectopic, and they cover the entire skin, apart from the lips and parts of the genitalia. Now, between them, they can produce up to 12 litres of sweat per day and are mostly concentrated on the palms, soles and armpits. They're controlled by the sympathetic nervous system, you know, the flight and fight system. But uniquely, the end effector is acetylcholine, not noradrenaline or adrenaline. We should probably briefly mention the apocrine sweat glands here. Now, these are confined to the axillae, the perineum and the areolae, and they produce a more viscid secretion with pheromones, and so they play a part in sexual attractiveness. Now, many of our patients equate sweating with body odour, but the two things actually don't have to go together. But when apocrine secretion becomes infected by a bacteria, it does produce a malodor responsible for BO, or body odour. Apocrine hypersecretion doesn't exist, but diseases of the glands can do, for example with hidradenitis suppurativa. Now, as doctors, we categorise hyperhidrosis into two main types: essential, which in my experience is the one I see most in my surgery, and secondary, due to an underlying cause. So essential or primary hyperhidrosis affects the sites with the greatest concentration of eccrine glands, so the palms, the soles and the axillae, and usually presents soon after puberty, typically remitting spontaneously in midlife, usually around the mid-40s, 50 at the latest. And actually, if the onset is after the age of 25, I'm usually concerned that this might actually not be essential hyperhidrosis, but something else due to an underlying cause. Essential hyperhidrosis presents twice as often in women as in men, although part of that may simply be because women seek more advice about it more often than men. It isn't really known how common this is, and estimates vary from 1% to 5%, but I think 1% to 2% is probably reasonable, and in roughly half of people with it, there is a positive family history of hyperhidrosis. Importantly, patients with primary hyperhidrosis do not sweat at night, a really key point. This is really important to help distinguish this from secondary hyperhidrosis. Patients with primary hyperhidrosis wake up dry. However, during the day, they start to sweat, and the sweat often drips off their skin or onto their clothes without evaporating, and their skin can actually look very boggy and waterlogged. If you want to assess hyperhidrosis, it can be scored slightly crudely by the Hyperhidrosis Disease Severity Score, and this simply relies on patient-reported outcome that looks at underarm sweating, and it's ranged 1 to 4. So you ask the patient, 1, is the underarm sweating never noticeable and never interferes with daily activities? 2, is it tolerable but sometimes interferes with daily activities? 3, is it barely tolerable and frequently interferes with daily activities? Or 4, is it absolutely intolerable and always interferes with daily activities? That gives you a very good objective view as to how bad the condition is. Now, in secondary hyperhidrosis, the excessive sweating occurs secondary to an underlying condition and can be either generalized or localized. But if someone has generalized secondary hyperhidrosis, there is an extremely long list of possible underlying medical conditions. Now, these can be as simple as obesity. The endocrine ones we know about, for example, thyrotoxicosis, menopause, diabetes, or even pheochromocytomas in rare cases. They may also be due to an underlying febrile illness. So TB we often think of, but again with TB, the sweating is classically nocturnal, and bacterial endocarditis should always be at the back of our minds. Lymphoma, again, typically nocturnal sweating. And we also mustn't forget that some medications we commonly prescribe do cause excessive sweating in some people. So, for example, SSRIs, opiates, ACE inhibitors, but there are lots more. So always just think about this. We've got someone coming in with excessive sweating.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy, who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
And now, back to our episode.
If you've got sweating localized to one area, then think about specific underlying causes. So unilateral hyperhidrosis, think about damage to the spinal cord. Now, I've seen one patient with gustatory hyperhidrosis, or von Frey syndrome, where damage to the auriculotemporal nerve results in nerve fibers becoming effectively tangled. And in that case, it was a complication of surgery to the parotid gland. Shingles may also do this. Very rare, but worth mentioning. Other causes of localized hyperhidrosis, think about peripheral neuropathy, think about strokes, or even intrathoracic surgery complications. Should we be investigating our patients with hyperhidrosis? Well, I think it is always sensible to do so, and there's lots of potential investigations we can do. A generalized blood test is always worth a screen. Full blood count, sugar, TFTs, inflammatory markers, LFTs, HIV, if appropriate, and if there is a relevant history, think about a malarial screen. A chest X-ray plus or minus a MAN2 test may also be a very sensible thing to do. Treatment is obviously the first thing that many patients will come asking for, and there's a huge range of possibilities here. But one of the first things to say to our patients, which is slightly counterintuitive, I know, is to not wash all the time, which is a tendency for many of our patients with excessive sweating to do, because excessive washing with soap raises the skin pH for 1 to 2 days, and that then in turn encourages bacterial overgrowth, and it's that bacterial overgrowth that triggers body odour. So the most common treatment, I suppose, we would all sort of reach for would be the roll-on aluminium chloride hexahydrate 20% preparations, things like Dry Claw and Anhydrol Forte. And these work because aluminium enters our sweat ducts, then causes edema, and then obstructs them, so the sweating reduces. However, very important practical point with these roll-ons, you must apply them to dry skin. The easiest thing to do is say to a patient, put it on at the very last thing at night before you go to bed. Because if you put it on to damp skin, it really can irritate and become sore, and also, in occasion, it can tarnish jewellery. If you do get intermittent soreness, which can occur, then a very mild to moderate steroid creams can help. Avoid shaving the armpits 48 hours beforehand, and when you're starting using these, put them on every night for about a fortnight, and then once a week to once every 3 weeks once things have settled down. If you're using them for palmoplantar sweating, however, you probably need to use them more often and for a longer period of time. Another clinical strength topical antiperspirant you might want to consider are the zirconium salt-based types. Simple water soaks can help, things like swimming or long soaks in a bath. These are temporary, they might only last 4 to 6 hours, but essentially what you're trying to do is waterlog eccrine ducts and block them. If you want to go to tablet treatment, then systemic anticholinergics can be really helpful, but as we all know, the problem with these is their side effect profile. Personally, I would probably go with something like oxybutynin, slow release, because that slow release preparation can reduce the likelihood of side effects occurring. Patients may come in and ask you about botulinum toxin injections, Botox. However, these are only licensed for axillary hyperhidrosis. What they do is they prevent the synaptic release of ACH and bind non-competitively. So about 3 months, 6 months, maybe 9 months before symptoms recover. They're not suitable on the hands, however, because there is a risk of permanent muscle weakness. Very occasionally, physiotherapy departments will provide the service of iontophoresis. Can be useful in extremities, twice a week, and many people see an improvement after 4, 20 or 30 minute sessions. Topical anticholinergics may be worth thinking about, things like Robinol 2% glycopyrrolate. And if you have hereditary emotional hyperhidrosis, then diltiazem has been tried in the past. And on that point, always treat any underlying anxiety that may be there, because that can have a significant impact on the level of hyperhidrosis present. In America, one of the pioneering treatments that's being considered and hasn't really reached us here yet is ultrasound destruction of eccrine glands. Although this is interesting, it's not over here yet, but keep a watch out for that, because this may be coming our way. And sympathectomy is the one that we are often taught about. However, in my view, I would say avoid if at all possible, or use it as a treatment of last resort. And this is really because of the significant risk of compensatory hyperhidrosis in the long term. Axillary hyperhidrosis has about a 30% recurrence rate, but if it has to be used, it can be effective on occasions, but I would use this as treatment of last resort. So, I hope you found that overview of hyperhidrosis helpful and that you've found it interesting and informative.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.
We have a great show today, but first, take a second to make sure you've subscribed to our show wherever you're listening to podcasts. It's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks.
Please take a moment to follow, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.